over the place before Owsley's did.
No. Oh.
Came out of that gang.
What was the name of that?
Well, you can ask him about that story.
Okay.
About the acid that Doobie took to San Francisco.
That wasn't like Clear Light or anything like
no,
that?
No, this is 1960.
Okay, 60. Yeah, this is way before anybody knew about it. Mostly. Yeah.
And it was that acid, the gay guy that, mm-hmm. I mean, it's incredible what Dave ran across and knows, you know, and who he bumped into.
Right.
But the point is he ends up back and he's channeling awareness after Doobie dies in 67. He does that till 74.
Mm-hmm.
In 74, there's a power struggle by a guy named Avaton, who's trying to work up, who doesn't like Worcester's gang, and he was part of the old Doobie gang, and he gets Shockley to channel. And they do it at this gathering in outside Seattle, where they've met every year, and they interrupted a session while Dave was in trance, and it seized up his chakras, his bones or something. He had a neck problem or something for many years, but he quit after that, and he went to L.A. So from 75 to 94, he's in L.A. first, and then he's Highland. You know that part called Highland?
Yeah.
He's up there near Chinatown or something, I think it is. And then he goes out to Lake Elsinore in the early 80s, and he's there till, say, 86, 87. Then he moves to Marina Del Rey, so he's part of the Venice world for about 7 years, till 94.
Mm-hmm.
Then he moves back up to Bellevue in 94. So that's the stage. So you've got almost 20 years in California. And when we met Jerry in 88, we introduced Worcester to Jerry then, or when we went back there in 93.
Mm-hmm.
So Worcester would always see Jerry on the boardwalk, you know, 93, 94, maybe even earlier. So that's how he knew Jerry. And he'd been to Jerry's house with me. So that's why he knows Jerry.
Mm-hmm.
So that's his basic, you know, trajectory.
Mm-hmm.
So what else you did? What did you say about UFOs?
Do you know what his middle name is?
Eugene.
Yeah, you got it.
It's Eugene.
Eugene. Yeah, that's right.
And he's born May the day before Dylan. Dylan's 24, and Dave is 23.
That's
Dave
right.
23.
That's right. 23.
Yeah, and Dylan's May 24th.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So he's on the cusp of your sign and Gemini.
Yeah, Dylan's still a Gemini.
Now, what's really amazing is that Dave doesn't know about this world. I've mentioned it, but he doesn't know it. The Rai talked about man dying. You know, man, Rai created man, and man died.
Mm-hmm.
So in the late 60s, early 70s, Roland Barthes and all the postmoderns start talking about the death of man. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Baudrillard developed it in a lot of ways. But if you see a picture of Baudrillard, he looks just like Worcester.
Really?
It's amazing. So the main thesis of cosmic awareness coming through Doobie and then Dave was from 62 on, what went on in Seattle, which was a city at that time that had the highest number of atheists of any city in North America.
Really nice.
That was his distinction. So there was a lot of interesting energies there in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
And the main point was that what that group did would be what they call a psychodrama, or would be an archetype.
Mm-hmm.
And it would manifest out all across consciousness, in the media, whatever, after it happened there or within 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So they're doing LSD sessions in the late 50s, before they get into cosmic awareness. And then it shows up later with Leary in the public.
Yeah.
And many things they did in 62 to 65 became the New Age and laid out years later. And that is an interesting history when he talks about that.
Uh-huh.
That somehow, if you believe it, they were in a fulcrum and acting out something as before it was like the first humans doing it, and then it would go out across consciousness.
Right.
Now, it came through awareness that when Hoffman was inventing LSD or working on it in 38, and then it sits there till 42 or 43, whatever was going on that five-year period, not sure which part of it, awareness said there was a guy crawling up there was a famous mountain climber or somebody who was mountain climbing Everest or something, some heavy mountains. His climbing up the mountains was the physical manifestation of what was happening for the LSD to come through.
Mm-hmm.
So I get from it that what people do, individual people all over the planet. They walk around, and whatever they do is triggering off connections on other levels that manifest in other phenomena. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I got you.
Yeah. So the phenomena that they were doing in Seattle manifested all over the place.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the 100 monkey phenomenon.
Right, right. It's a 100 monkey. And the interesting about Dave is that he's such an interesting guy. You know, once you meet him, you could believe it.
Well, yeah, no, I mean, he's definitely out there. I mean,
yeah.
I didn't want to get, I have much more to talk about than we even got started.
Right. But would this preliminary conversation would give you the parameters of how to start your questioning, maybe?
Well, yeah,
redo the same.
I'm just going to free associate with him because
right.
I feel like he's one of the few people that I can have a real conversation with and not have to go, you know, you don't have to explain yourself, you know.
That's right. Yeah.
And that's because he's had the same experiences that I've had.
And
more. And
probably that's why you like me, because I learned a lot from him.
No,
you like talking to me.
Well, I'd like you anyway, Bob. Whether you talk to
right.
If you were a mute, I would like you, Bob.
Yes, but I understood the metaphysical principle of post-Krishnamurti.
Yeah.
And I got a lot from him, and then I probably could understand what you were talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, you were right there. You've always never had any trouble. Because he asked a lot of fucking questions, but trivial questions. I kept thinking, I'm talking to Worcester, and I'm thinking, God, I don't ask questions like Bob does. What do you mean by that? When specifically was it? What date was that? Now, when birthday? What longitude and latitude were you at? Yeah.
Well, the reason I do that is because I connect it to my own history or the history of the world that I can remember.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You
yeah.
tell me what happened in March 65, I can then think of some things that happened either to me or other people.
Okay.
And that's how I trigger. Then I'll say it to that person, and they go, oh, yeah. And then they'll say something. That's how you trigger their memory.
I got it. Oh, I see what you're doing. You're associating.
It's a mnemonic.
You're making associations, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I got his address. I'm going to send him a check of a few bucks. I don't have much money myself.
Oh, great. He didn't ask for that, did he?
No, he didn't ask for that. He wouldn't ask for that. He's a man of great principle and
right.
high
education. He tells this great story.
He's an elegant man. He's a brilliant. And I said, Have you ever thought about writing a book about your life? He says, well, you know, he says, it's better if other people do it, you know. So he says, you know, they like the way I speak, but I just don't, you know, I guess he doesn't write, you know, he doesn't want to. Yeah, because I think he's into the flow. I think he's so highly intuitive that he's still a channeling to this day. I mean, that's why I passed on.
Here's what.
That's why I passed on the thing about the SL, because I think he picked up from me.
Yes, yeah.
Some
medical
thing.
Let me tell you a couple
thing.
Of stories that show you how sensitive it is.
Right.
When I met him in 69, and then I would drop in every couple of years, and I remember in 71, I gave him head comics.
Oh, yeah.
R. Crumb's head comics.
Oh, God damn.
You know, Mr. Natural stuff?
Uh-huh.
And he sat down, and he was like a monk, you know, like Aquinas. He was reading it.
Uh-huh.
And he told me later that just to read, he sees so many levels.
Yes.
That it's very slow. And Awareness talked about his time to close the book and move into action.
Yeah.
And that resonates with McLuhan.
Yeah.
See, I see McLuhan saying that, right, when this TV becomes the viewer becomes the screen, that is the technological reflection of the fact that Rai returned to essence and there was no separateness anymore between spirit and matter.
Mm.
So there's one example of a sensitivity.
Mm-hmm.
And it's too slow for the multiple levels he lives. Another example is in the late 60s, he went up to Seattle, to Alaska, and he went on TV and he broadcast, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He did the oracular, or he did something. They featured him on TV. He said he was laid up for 3 days after because of the psychic effect of being on TV.
Yeah, he's doing a radio interview tomorrow.
Oh, for who?
Oh, some PBS channel up there, local.
I wonder how that happened.
I don't know, but I'm.
What
gonna,
triggered that?
I don't know, but I'm.
Maybe it's time for the world to hear from him.
I'm calling him before that. He's got me scheduled in before.
Great, so he goes.
He
on,
told me to read the 139th Psalm. Have you ever read the 139th Psalm?
He's mentioned many times, but I don't remember it.
I don't even know. I said, "Is that Jesus?" He says, "No, it's David." Fuck, I don't know what it
is. I'll have to look at that.
No, is that an Old Testament Psalm? I thought anything that was a Psalm was what Jesus said.
No, the Psalms are written by Solomon or David or King David.
It's David then. Yeah, that's right. I thought, what do they call the things? Is this? What do they call that stuff that's in the different colors in the Bible that they're Jesus' words? They're called Psalms, aren't they?
No, I don't think so. The Psalms, the Songs of Solomon, and there's the Psalms of David, I think.
Oh, really? No.
And that's Old Testament. But the so he's so sensitive. He said the psychic consequences of going on the electric medium and putting it out there, he immediately felt the effects of it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's pretty sensitive. Another time, he's told me that he doesn't spend much time in the cortex, that he spends a lot of his time, you know, in the invisible zone, in the unconscious zone.
Yeah,
It's like a state of meditation, but below the cortex.
I got to ask him about all of that shit.
Yeah,
we haven't even gotten. You know, all we got.
You write that down. You should make notes. TV in Alaska.
All right.
Bob, how hard it is for him to read. Because and that's so post Gutenberg. You need to today to be tuned in. It's happening so fast. If you want to keep tuned in, which is what he does, he monitors the news regularly. He's tuned into what's happening. He's paying attention all the time. He's living in the electric present. Why write something? Especially since that's concept, and he's post-Krishnamurti, who blows the water out of concept.
Right.
Krishnamurti didn't know that McLuhan saw that post-concept was an environment.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
A perceptual environment.
Mm-hmm.
So Worcester is sensitive about that. Mm-hmm. And there's the reading, the TV.
Pink Floyd,
and he doesn't live in his cortex too much.
Uh-huh. Cortex.
And he has had luck in all kinds of strange ways. And he was. Now, here's where you begin. In 1949, he would have been 21 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he was becoming 22. He was in the Navy, and he was in Hawaii. Now, this is really important.
Uh-huh.
This is where it begins. He's in Hawaii in 1949, stationed there, and he gets on the Navy radio, the local radio, whatever the radio was there, and he plays music. And he attracts the attention of the Kahuna magicians in Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
They like his voice.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he was called Blue David, or the Blue Boy, because he wore blue or something a lot. So he then got initiated into the Kahuna Hawaiian guy.
Oh, no shit.
That's fucking early. Because they picked up his energies from being a radio DJ. That's where you begin.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, well, I haven't got... He doesn't know I'm a hypnotherapist or anything like that.
Well, he studied hypnosis.
Well, I know he did, and that's why, I mean, I haven't...
Rai was the original hypnosis. I mean, he.
Well, how do you say Rai? What is that? I don't know about Rai.
Rai was the.
How do you spell
it? Note about that. What's Rai?
How do you spell it?
R H Y E E.
R H.
Think of Ra coming from that.
Rai. Okay.
The Egyptian Ra. Rai was the original. When he describes the beginning of existence or spirit, spirit was existing. And there would be a vibe, so everything would be red.
Mm-hmm.
Then it would shift to blue, and all spirit would come blue. Okay, this is human conceptualization of the spirit.
Yeah, anthropomorphic.
Yes, I'm projecting here, so it's all blue.
Mm-hmm.
Then it started to move into green.
Mm-hmm.
But one little blue. And my order of colors may be different from what Dave says.
Yeah.
But one little blue refused to become green.
Mm-hmm.
So some aspect of green smashed the blue that did not become green.
Mm-hmm.
That was Rai.
Mm-hmm.
It judged the resistance of blue and did not accept it and hit it and then took off. And consciousness chased it or watched it take off, spiral off, and it created all these levels of matter like you have in the theosophical theology. And eventually created this dimension.
Mm-hmm.
So Rai took off in this act of judgment after smashing the blue stone or the green stone, whichever was the second color, and takes off and creates this dimension. It's now created matter, and now it's isolated.
Mm-hmm.
So spirit created a female, or an Isis factor, which would come and live in the Rai-made world.
Mm-hmm.
And try to bring Rai back to spirit or the plane of essence.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the dialectic between men and women. Now, the deal Rai accepted Isis in his dimension if she agreed, and maybe she offered this to seduce him,
mm-hmm.
she said, I will perpetuate this dimension
mm-hmm.
by bearing kids and keep it going.
Mm-hmm.
So the creation of generations was a setup between Rai and Isis.
Is.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, what happened after Rai returned to Essence, you know, millions, thousands, whatever.
Well, who is Rai and what mythology is he in?
It comes through cosmic awareness.
Oh, okay.
It comes through cosmic awareness.
All right, great. All right.
This is a name that you can see the resonances of it in Ra and that.
Right.
But it's the original separateness that created this dimension on the deeper level.
Gotcha.
So Isis has this relationship with Rai, which is the male-female archetype. Rai returned to Essence. It turned out that Dubi was miming the last days of Rai in 66, 67. So he dies in January 67, and Rai returns to Essence. There's no more separateness.
Mm-hmm.
And so our wombs were closed at that point.
Mm-hmm.
The beginning of the closing of the deal of procreation between Rai and Isis ended at that point.
So that was the end of the womb with a view.
Beg your pardon? Yeah, the womb with a view.
That's
right.
The end of the womb with a view.
Yes.
Right.
And so Rai is where all principalities, all hypnosis, the word author, Dave used to say in lectures, has the word awe in it, A-W-E.
Uh-huh.
And Rai is setting up an awe, a hypnosis, which is really a separateness and a way of controlling matter.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Rai is. All of control functions, priests, principalities, kingdoms, I say in my chart, media. If you notice, Rai is on my chart.
Mm-hmm.
Media is the after image of Rai, because when Rai returns to Essence, awareness said, cosmic awareness said, there was only the cobwebs of Rai left.
Mm-hmm.
And I see that as the media,
mm-hmm.
the internet. So
yeah, he reminded me that he was one of the, what do you call him?
The holy offices.
Holy offices and stuff. And I didn't say anything to him, but I will get
it. There's on the Memo to Prince Charles, the booklet in the album,
yeah.
I have the 10 holy offices.
Yeah.
McLuhan,
yeah.
Herbert W. Armstrong, LaRouche, Zappa, Joyce, Beater, Mae Brussel. There's seven. I use the seven liberal arts.
Mm-hmm.
Each one's rhetoric, grammar, or logic, music, astronomy, arithmetic, and geometry, and music. And then number eight is mediumship. I bring in the non-Western occult, and that's cosmic awareness.
Mm-hmm.
And also the evergreens, but nobody knew about the evergreens, so
yeah.
I call it cosmic awareness.
Mm-hmm.
And then the personal education is always someone you get initiated personally by. That's Garrett Dean.
Mm-hmm.
So he is holy office number eight.
Mm-hmm. The late Garrett Dean.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Who I've talked to through the evergreens.
Oh, good. How's he doing?
Well, that was many years ago. He's doing great, but I found out some interesting stuff that he did around me that I was curious about.
Oh.
And he explained it.
Great.
Like at one time he sort of... what happens, I was sitting with him one day in his home, this is in Dartmouth, Nova Scotia. He left the room, this great kitchen. Now, he had a powerful voice. He was much like Worcester in terms of communication, living in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I met Worcester, and I took their development classes in 69, 70, and then I met Garrett in 71 where I met the living version of Worcester, you know what I mean? Or a living expression of what I kind of learned from Worcester.
Mm-hmm.
And even though Worcester himself was that, but he was on the other side of the continent. So I became a longtime friend of Garrett, and like after like 75, 76, one time he leaves the room, goes down the hall, and he comes back. And all of a sudden I see him standing in the doorway of the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
He's got this sort of intense look on his face, and he's got a big knife in his hand. And it looks like he's going to stab something.
Hmm.
And it could be me, but he's holding back. He's vibrating like he's stuck in some weird state of mind where he can't go forward.
Yeah.
So I watched him quivering there with this big knife, and eventually he stopped.
Mm-hmm.
And he went in the kitchen to put the knife down, and I never said a word.
Yeah.
I didn't say anything about what the fuck was that.
Right.
So when he died, I asked him, I said, what happened then?
Mm-hmm.
Turned out that he said that he had this weird brain condition, and the evergreens went into the chemistry of it.
Yeah.
Where he would have these weird seizures.
Yeah.
And I'm missing one element of it. I can't remember. I don't know what the knife part it was. But he would have these all the time.
This is Dubi?
No, this is Garrett Dean.
Garrett Dean. Oh, okay.
Garrett Dean in Nova Scotia. I'm with him after I've met Worcester.
Right.
I'm back
okay.
in Nova Scotia.
Okay.
Okay?
All right.
And he was a Broadway actor.
Yeah.
But he was born in Nova Scotia. But he was an incredible orator. You heard him on Furry Land, I think.
Yeah, I did. I've heard...
So he's there frozen with this knife, and so what's going on? So I ask him through the evergreens after he dies in 93, and he says his brain seizure, it was like a weird epileptic fit, and he would have it, you know, he couldn't control when he was having it, but that's why he became reclusive,
mm-hmm.
because he didn't know when he'd have this weird
mm-hmm.
thing.
Yeah.
And I can't remember why the knife aspect of it. It mm-hmm. was like his mind wanted to do something, but the other part of the mind would cancel it out.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember what he said about actually stabbing me or what the hell that was about. But that's what I found out, the mystery of what happened. And then Garrett said, I was very glad that you didn't tell anybody about that and that mm-hmm. you didn't say anything and you handled it very well. So I got a compliment.
Yeah.
So that's one thing we talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And then we talked about another time I talked to him, he gave me some clues about New York City.
Mm-hmm.
That was interesting because, you know, he'd grown up, he'd lived so many years. He was in New York City from, like, the middle 20s till the late 60s. Then he stopped going there so much in the 70s.
This is Worcester.
This is Garrett Dean.
Oh, Garrett Dean.
Garrett Dean,
okay.
The ninth holy office,
okay.
The one who's my personal initiation.
Okay, all right.
But I met Worcester and learned all about that stuff out in Cosmic Awareness Land,
right.
And then I go back and meet someone who I'm prepared to handle.
So did you...
you get that? I'm prepared to handle Garrett Dean by being educated a bit by Worcester
right,
in that world.
Right, right.
But then I meet this guy who I'm going to spend a lot of time with who does the whole thing on me. I mean, I learned a lot from Garrett Dean just by living in his house.
Oh, yeah. Didn't you have a video of your last...
My lecture, probably showed my lecture... And at the end of it, he's talking.
You have a video where you go to his house and stuff.
Oh, that's the audio at the beginning of Who's Forgotten Furry Lynn. Yes, we walk up to his house, we go in, and we talk for about 20 minutes on tape. I've got hours of him on tape.
I thought you had it on videotape.
Well, I do have a shot. I don't have that on video. That's on audio. But a few weeks later, that was done in December 83.
Yeah.
A few weeks later,
yeah.
I spoke at a university in Halifax.
Right.
And he came to it. And after the lecture, we have him interacting with various people. That's on tape.
Mm.
And Jerry probably has it and probably showed it to you.
No, I think you showed it to me somewhere. And it was going up the stairs and, you know, going up to ringing the doorbell.
No, that's the audio. That's the beginning of Who's Forgotten Furry Lynn.
Are you telling me I'm having a synesthetic experience?
Your memory is mutating. I showed you the video of him in a classroom with me, and then you're overlaying with the audio you heard.
All right, so the audio, I swear to God, I can see the visuals on the audio.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, that's what's so great about that tape, Who's Forgotten Furry Lynn, it's a dramatic, I mean, I think you've heard it, Worcester's on, everybody's on it.
Yeah.
All the holy offices.
Yeah, but I didn't know those people. You know.
Right, well, Mae Brussels on it, Dr. Beter.
I know her.
Beter's one of the holy offices.
Yeah.
So Jerry probably played you some of that.
That I'll never
understand.
And
he may
understand.
Have shown you the video. Or I showed you the video when you were at my place in 91.
Yeah, maybe you did. Yeah.
Have you mentioned just a side thing? Did you mention Sophia that I might want to call her? You haven't talked
to
her?
Yeah, I told her. Yeah. Told
okay,
her.
Good. She's interested in...
Well, I said, I talked to her briefly today.
Did you mention Jim George, the name?
I mentioned Jim George. She never heard of him.
Okay, well, I'll tell her. I'll tell
and
her.
And she says that the Threshold was founded in 70 or 71.
That may be, I have to check. I know that Jim George took it over in the early 80s. Now, they probably brought him in to manage it.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'll have to see.
All right.
She may not have that right. I'll read it right out of the book to her.
Yeah, and tell her the name of the book and all that stuff. And I'm sure she'd be. She was interested in.
Right.
Hearing
so back
that.
To Dave. So you were talking now. He has great. Did you ever see Christian Murty talk?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You have seen them. Because Dave and them are very involved with the Christian Murty world early, and they have lots of amazing stories on Christian Murty and people that were involved. And
Christian Murty is great. He's a Taurus, too.
Right. And Dave Millette. Dave Millette. Hey, Karen, what's that guy's name? Dave Millette? Dave Millette? Is that his name? Yeah. What is Judy Turok's husband's name? Wagner? Saul? Stephen? Sherman? Sheldon? Okay.
Sheldon.
Yeah, that was just some other side thing. I remembered, reminded myself to ask Carolyn. But what was I just... asking first.
Dave Millett, you were saying?
Oh, yeah. Ask about Dave Millett.
Okay.
I think that's his name, Dave Millett. That is a very interesting family. Very involved with Krishnamurti from the before Worcester met Krishnamurti.
Mm-hmm.
And that overlaps with Bo Kitzelman.
Mm-hmm.
Bo Kitzelman. Did you bring up Bo Kitzelman?
Yeah, we didn't talk about it much, but he acknowledged.
Yes, Bo Kitzelman and Dave Millett. You put those two together to get some of the history, because if Rai was returning to essence, that's true, right? Krishnamurti was the last mm-hmm. expression of a principality, mm-hmm. an awe, a religion, mm-hmm. an importance, a significance. And he was the last guy, you know, acting out the Rai, but canceling Rai as he did it.
Uh-huh.
And so these people involved with Krishnamurti in the 50s and early 60s leads into cosmic awareness, and that's the interesting study of hypnosis.
Mm-hmm.
Because they talk about spiritual, or just hypnosis on a metaphysical archetypal level.
Mm-hmm.
McLuhan talks about it in empirical media terms,
mm-hmm.
and they interrelate.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about hypnosis.
Mm-hmm.
So what is hip-hop? Hip-hop is hypnosis as art form.
Gee, great. Great.
The kids pretend to be hypnotized.
Yeah, they just pretend to be hypnotized. They're putting on hypnosis.
That's right.
Yeah. Good.
And that brings in the very important Russian study. It was Pavlov, I think, that Dave tells the story that Pavlov just told the Soviets
mm-hmm.
that if you hypnotize people like you're trying to do, it'll eventually, they will wake up to it, or it will flip into its opposite effect, and you'll never be able to hypnotize them again.
Mm-hmm.
That is part of the death of hypnosis
mm-hmm.
and the death of Rai. That is something you got to ask about. Pavlov, I think mm-hmm. I got to write Pavlov, what he told the Soviets.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very important point that Dave mm-hmm. brings up.
Right, I will.
Another story is, I remember once in 1980 at the airport as we were leaving L.A., he told me and Carol, interesting, he just brought up the story. He says, anthropologists, either this was a particular ancient tribe they were talking to, and Dave found significance of the fact that this tribe said they could solve everything in the ecology of their tribe, which went on, you know, for thousands of years mm-hmm. in their zero-sum state sort of thing. They never could solve hate.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's an interesting thing, an mm-hmm. anthropological mm-hmm. anecdote that you might mm-hmm. want to ask him about what that means to him.
Mm-hmm. I will.
Another thing is that Dave always said that you you have to learn, if you don't align power, sex, and money properly, you'll be a perverted person, a distorted person.
Mm-hmm.
Those three forces have to be aligned when you're moving into those levels, power, mm-hmm. sex, and money. So that's an interesting triad he talks
mm-hmm.
about.
Mm-hmm. I must have done something wrong.
Well, okay, the what else?
I did sex and money. I didn't have the power, though. I left the power out.
Yes, you did with Hitchcock.
Huh?
Hitchcock, Peggy.
That's sex and money.
And power.
Yeah, I had the power. She didn't have the fucking power.
Which reminds me, you need to, you know, when, let him tell you about the, here's another topic, the bank account. When Rai returned to Essence,
mm-hmm.
all the bank accounts that Rockefellers and Mellons had were emptied. They did not have the power of their accounts. Now, mm-hmm. Worcester explains this in better detail. I'm just overriding, summarizing it. And therefore, the plan, the grand design for an apocalyptic or Armageddon or a way of the elites, the Freemasons, Illuminati, controlling the mm-hmm. the destruction and therefore still maintaining control and bringing in New World Order,
mm-hmm.
that was off balance from 68 on.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I always take that fact, and that's why we've had almost little, like the war in June 67, the Israeli-Egyptian war, that could have been Israeli-Arab Six-Day War. That could have been an apocalyptic thing. Reinhard Gehlen was orchestrating that. That didn't work totally, and that's a few mm-hmm. months after Rai returned to Essence. Then the attempts to do, say, Rex 84 didn't work. You know, all mm-hmm. those attempts of bringing in martial law on that, they were mm-hmm. off-key because there was no real foundation for them anymore. I always found it interesting that what that accountant, I guess you call him, of the Mellon family told you in 68 that they're going to create a depression and make it a privilege to work, right?
Yeah,
and
have a work job. Is a privilege and not a right.
What? Yeah, privilege
not
and
a right.
not a right.
Yeah, we're going to teach the workers work is a privilege and not a right. That's what he said.
Yeah. Now, that statement is after Rai returns to Essence, and one could say, yes, they've implemented it, but you need to tell Worcester that statement and relate to Wright and see what he says about that.
Okay. Okay. God, that's great, Bob.
Yeah.
That's great. Just one
He's an ongoing metaphysician that needs to be listened to and thought about and relate to other things.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's using the principle of not having any power or not trying to hypnotize people, but he's looking at the hypnosis all around him and its disappearance and how people still try to hypnotize. He has a very interesting take on Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
He told me in 93, that would be, when were we there? The spring of 93, Clinton had just got in. He says the Republicans, which is largely the doctors, have 5 years to reestablish control. In 98, they do Lewinsky.
Oh, yeah.
And now you have the Republicans back in power. Are they, you know, vulnerable? Did they do it? Can they do it if there's Rai, there's no Rai? That's, and so Worcester has an interesting, ironic, humorous approach to these guys attempting to retrieve their power. And they had 5 years, and it took them 5 years until they did Lewinsky on Clinton. So that's an interesting prediction.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's the drug company and the AMA and
all
that.
Yeah.
The high priest, the last gasp of Rai, the hypnosis of health.
I want to ask him about the cortex and about the subconscious and about the reptilian brain, the limbic system. See what he says.
He knows a lot about that.
About that and about animal hypnosis.
Ask him about the number 22 in the tarot cards, which he says this on Furry Lint. Who's forgotten Furry Lint, the long four-hour thing?
Yeah.
I think I have a tape. I used to tape him without telling him, but he didn't mind. But then I used to put some of it on the radio. But no, he didn't mind that. But the he trusted me. But he talks about how 22 came from this ancient knowledge, which was very complex or something. So the precursors, it's like the they have all this amazing knowledge way back there, and then something destroys it, so they crystallize it down to 22 cards or the tarot cards.
Mm-hmm.
I may have got that wrong, but that's something to ask them about. Where the major arcana and the minor arcana come from.
Yeah, I will.
And the kahuna ring. The kahuna ring was what went around the planet after Rai returned to essence. It came through awareness in 1964 that there was 5 years to alter the design of the biblical apocalypse.
Well, I touched on it from my point of view. What I heard from the these ET presence or whatever, the higher presence that I was communicating with, in 66, and he said, "What now? Tell me." And he was really interested in that. Then we said,
he knows dates, and 66 is resonant with him.
Yeah, and you know, he was really right on.
He's interested.
Yeah, he's really interested.
He pays attention. You tell him something, he wants to hear it. He absorbs any new wacko that comes into his life.
Yeah.
He absorbs.
Right. Well, I'm not a wacko.
We're wackos.
I'm not a wacko. You can be a wacko if you want to be, but I'm not a wacko. I don't want to be a wacko. I think we live on a planet of wackos.
Yes, well, we know that.
You know, now here's it occurred to me.
That's why we're wackos.
It occurred to me watching the outcome of that fucking guy. What, he's supposed to have killed his wife and kid, you know?
Peterson.
Yeah, it is the trial, how they fucking hung him in 7 hours, you know, once they got the jury adjusted correctly. You know? A little bit crooked there, boy.
Yeah, you mean Lacey Peterson?
Yeah, because it sounded to me like it was, and even the expert pundit analyst that attended the trial couldn't believe he was convicted.
Oh, you mean he's not guilty?
They found him guilty, but Jesus
but
Christ, he
guilty.
Might not be guilty is what I'm
is
saying.
That right?
There's no fucking evidence.
Right. That's
it's just all circumstantial and stuff. It's all crappy, and it's like coincidental, and they don't believe in coincidences.
Well, is it true that he lied to everybody? They caught him lying.
Yeah, he lied about women. You know, this is American tradition. You fuck women on the side, and you lie about it.
Was he rich?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so was she.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. And they try to make that his... you know, the motive was he wanted her money.
Right.
That's why he killed her. I don't believe it.
Okay, so when I say wacko, we mean we're sub-geniuses. Oh. And a wacko is someone who pays attention. to what's going on, to things that other people, the normals, don't pay attention
to. Oh, okay. Is that what you mean?
So when we show up, Dave pays attention, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, actually,
I told him about us seeing Shockley, but I couldn't get into that either, you know.
You said you saw Shockley?
No, you and I went to see Shockley, Paul Shockley.
Oh, you told him about that?
I just said we went to see him, and we planted some shit, and it turned out in the next reading. Next letter he put out, you know?
Yes.
And he then went on, but another, he said Shockley fucked up his life and was a thief and, you know, was a crook.
We went there in, it was during the Falklands War, it was March, April, 82.
Is that when it was? Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was February, March, 82, before Falklands happened in April. It was a dark year. 82 was a dark year. It was a depression, you know, and war and all that. If you want, but you just brought up, there was something else. Here's another thing he says. I forgot it, but I remembered another thing. He says he doesn't regard there's anybody else in the world.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that everything's disappeared, Dave lives it. He says it's very hard for him to find someone else in the world. Mm-hmm. But when we show up, he has a relationship because we exist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have that intensity.
Mm-hmm.
So when you mentioned the, you know, 66, what's that? He wants to hear because he doesn't hear many real things or things that have any energy of reality.
Well, we were talking about that. We spoke about, you know, like, I don't know exactly how we said it, but
yeah.
I wish it was on tape. But it was, you know, like it's, you know, you get to a certain point of enlightenment, and it's really hard to find people that when you're trying to express this, they want to put you in the Bellevue, you know.
Yeah.
And that was my experience. They wanted to lock me fucking up. And Sherry was the leader of the gang. She's now dying of cancer.
Yeah, I've heard that name, Sherry.
Sherry
worked for Rolling Stone.
No, she was my girlfriend, and she did the East Village, and then she worked for Evergreen Grove Press. You know.
She's not Wolf's mother.
No, I didn't have any children with her. And
when was Sherry your girlfriend?
Just before Peggy. But I, you know, she
at the EVO. She worked at the EVO.
Yeah, she was there. No, she didn't.
She's the one in Avant Garde.
She's the one in Avant Garde. Right?
She's
the school teacher now.
Right. So she's out in Tucson too.
She's there. Yeah, and she's she had a child, one child. And
when did she want to put you in Bellevue back then?
Back in those, you know, during the 40-day experience.
Now here's the timing of that.
Yeah.
I mentioned you in when I send. White the book, there'll be the memo to Prince Charles, which goes into your 40 day period. I talked about that in the memo to Prince Charles.
Great.
Now here's why I always want to bring you and Worcester together.
Mm-hmm.
Is that is the period when Doobie is going nuts in Hawaii, trying to set up a new cult,
right.
And he's going to have heart attacks and die.
Right.
That was an intense period for Dave because he withdrew from the group and dropped out of it through 66.
Uh-huh.
And then in early 67, which is around the time that you were on your 40 days or ending it, he dies. Then Worcester is still laying low, and then they come to him in the summer of 67. So the intent you guys both had, see, I think that you were miming some level of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If it's true what came through Cosmic Awareness, you were picking up on the death of Rai in your 40-day wacko, or 40-day trip. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I don't know. I wasn't introduced to anybody named Rai.
No, you wouldn't.
But I was in touch with some really incredible intelligence that was made you very humble because of its brilliance and compassion. It questioned me like I was a beta station or beta, computer
like
program, huh?
Question you like me?
Yeah, like you, but I mean more like, but
even more.
Well, you know, you couldn't, you know, apparently you haven't demonstrated total transparency. I mean, I'm not totally transparent to you yet.
Right. They questioned you even though they knew everything about you.
They knew everything. They knew the answers before I gave them. You know? But all they were looking for was the right answers is what they were looking
for. Here's, I didn't finish this other thought.
Yeah.
So the awareness said in 63 or 64, early 64, that there was 5 years for an enlightened mind to do something on the planet to alter the Armageddon, traditional Armageddon scenario that the Bible imprinted into everybody, that it would start happening in 69, 70, 71 if something didn't happen. So from 64 to 69, that five-year period, mm-hmm. all kinds of things burst out. You can go from Fritz Perls to Esalen. McLuhan burst out in 64. Mm-hmm. He was a post-Rye thinker. And Worcester and them are doing all that mediumship mm-hmm. with Doobie in that
mm-hmm.
period.
Mm-hmm.
That's another thing to ask about, the march from 64 to 69, because mm-hmm. Rye returns to Esalen 67, but the apex of polarity is September 5th, 69.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very interesting thing that happens then.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the acting out of this, siphoning off of this historical pattern, stereotype, archetype that was inevitable
mm-hmm.
if humans didn't sort of try to wake people up by not trying to be a religion and redoing a hypnosis, which was the principle you were operating on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Wake them up without trying to turn it into a new cult.
Yeah, oh yeah, fuck yeah. This is... It was
so TV, and McLuhan showed how TV did that. TV was transparency. Nobody mm-hmm. could control a TV environment.
Yeah.
Only
well, I think that's the nature of the information age, is
yes.
that when information travels at the speed of light, there is no propriety, there's no secrecy.
Right.
It's everywhere at once, right? And you can't control things with that. And also, you better just walk around, because not only is the emperor naked, everybody's naked.
Right.
You know.
And so. Now, that the McLuhan dealing with that fact
yeah.
and relating the traditional Rye power through print.
Yeah.
What's the role of the old print cover-up in relation to that? That's what Joyce and McLuhan worked on. And Worcester worked on it metaphysically
mm-hmm.
through cosmic awareness readings.
Mm-hmm.
They had the same point. Why mm-hmm. have a religion when everybody's all at one?
Yeah.
And so I always found it interesting as I entered more and more
yeah.
in the 60s and 70s
yeah.
that what awareness said, that Rye returned to essence, that most amazing fact.
Mm-hmm.
Who would believe that it happened in January 67? And here's a medium saying this. And yet, once you understood McLuhan, you realize it happened externally.
Yeah, yeah.
Not only on the inner plane. So
yeah.
there's proof that awareness was not lying.
Right, right.
That we spent 30 to 40 years trying to adapt to the fact there's no secrecy. And all the principalities, iconically known as the CIA.
They haven't got it yet.
Well, what's interesting, that's the cobwebs of Rye.
Yeah.
And Dave's commenting on that. Him laughing at those that don't get it and
yeah.
how it falls away.
Yeah.
But here's what he told me in 93,
oh.
that once we now know, we want to get it clear. We know Rye's return to essence, but we don't know what part of man that Rye created survives that.
Uh-huh.
And that's what we've been doing for 30 years, trying to find out what survives that. What
uh-huh.
part of print? You see this in McLuhan's writings. He says,
uh-huh.
a new medium obsolesces all the older media. So what is valuable of the older society, the older medium? It's what has relevance and predicts the future. That was one of his answers.
Mm-hmm.
Predicts the fate of itself.
Mm-hmm.
He says the artist knows what to save from the old environment
mm-hmm.
to adjust it to the new. So there's McLuhan working out in terms of culture the very drama of what we do when there are no secrets.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing to say and everybody's integrated. What does man do and humans and women do then?
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
so then the closing of the womb is genetic engineering.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, the womb with a voo.
The womb with a voo, yeah.
yeah.
Now, the interesting thing about that is Worcester loved this movie. And it came out in the 80s,
yeah.
and I'm not sure if it's Room with a View, but he cites that. But I never know. I have never got this straight. I have to find out what that
was.
No,
there was a movie. There was a movie.
Oh, yeah, it was a movie. It's one of those, you know, 80s
yeah.
novelistic
yeah, yeah,
movies.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
no,
it's a mom novel or something.
Mm.
The movie I'm thinking of,
yeah.
The Ugly Maid,
yeah.
The ugly woman who's an idiot through the whole movie, in the end, she saves the game.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. And that's a sign that, you know, everybody's equal. Everybody
mm-hmm.
has a role.
Mm-hmm.
Even though she's a dupe and a doofus,
mm-hmm.
all the way through. It's like Peggy.
Yeah.
Peggy's an asshole all her life. She may, in the year 2007, say something to Worcester or you
yeah.
when we're all in the same room
mm-hmm.
that will fucking break it through. You know
yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah,
that movie, if I could find out what it was, tells that kind of story. Does it sound familiar to you?
Yeah, you can't discount Peggy, man.
You can't discount anybody. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the amazing thing that Maggie's in Finnegan's Wake, it's
yeah.
Maggie's
yeah.
is the girls around Isis, the daughter. Issy, the daughter, has
yeah.
all her friends are Maggie's.
Yeah.
And Carol has met nothing but Margaret's or Peggy's in her life.
Yeah.
And Peggy is a major Maggie.
Yeah.
But anyways, that's the story.
Yeah.
Peggy's a major Maggie.
That's true. She's a naggy Maggie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I got to find out what that movie is and if that's what Worcester means, because he cites A Room with a View. Write that down. Is that the movie or maybe I'm off?
Yeah.
But that's a phrase he used.
Well, I've already got tomorrow's interview lined up. I got more than I can write.
No, but you'll do more interviews.
Yeah, I know. I look forward to it. Yeah, he's an amazing guy, and I hope he sends me the tapes. Have you got those tapes? Audio tapes of the 13 tapes of his.
Oh, of the courses?
Yeah.
The development classes?
Yeah,
no,
yeah,
I don't ever had them. I just went through them.
Oh, you did that. Okay, wait a minute. And then the last one.
Well, here's the story with that.
Wait a second. Okay, the last one was called the Golden Cloak Ritual.
Here's what. Oh, yeah, I didn't tell you this. No.
Mm-hmm.
The whole, you have all these people interested, Robert Anton Wilson interested in Aleister Crowley.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Crowley set up the last gasp of the Ryi function.
Mm-hmm.
And cosmic awareness came through Doobie to undo the order of the Golden Dawn.
Uh-huh.
Remember, Krishnamurti left that same world, too.
Mm-hmm.
He left that world.
Right.
The theosophy,
right.
The Theosophical Society, the Order of Golden Dawn, the Crowley world, all those
right.
New Age bullshit. And you see, you know, Anton LaVey and these guys, they go into it
right.
And do wacky stuff with it.
Right.
And they're wallowing around trying to keep Ra'i going.
Mm-hmm.
So this is what always struck me about the neat metaphysics of awareness and what it said and what Worcester represented
mm-hmm.
is that he was a counter-environment to Robert Anton Wilson and Leary.
Great. Who was? Worcester?
Worcester. Is.
Oh, great.
That's what he is, because
God
he came
bless
to awareness
him.
To dismantle the Order of the Golden Dawn
yeah.
and the Crowley thing, and that's all that Wilson did
yeah.
was to keep the Crowley myth going.
That's right.
And he's the surface acceptable pink version of Worcester.
Yeah.
And Worcester, so there it is, the Order of the Golden Dawn and the Golden Cloak. So
yeah.
So we took these courses
yeah.
in 69-70, and we mm-hmm. got up to class number 10.
Mm-hmm.
And Carol and I and another guy decided to drop out because we thought there was a potential becoming member of a cult. So we dropped out of it,
yeah.
and that was 70. So mm-hmm. then we never finished the courses.
Uh-huh.
So in 74, at the get-together, they used to call them the August Affair,
mm-hmm.
in a place called Clearwater outside Seattle,
mm-hmm.
Or Clearview. Clearview.
Yeah.
Clearview.
Yeah.
Room with a view. We showed up a few days after the big gathering where Shockley and Avaton nailed Dave.
Uh-huh.
We missed all that. We showed up late. We always showed up
at the right time.
September 20. What?
You showed up at the right time.
We always show up after. See, Carol and I, we represent the new. So we,
yeah.
you know, the George Washington of the new plane of existence.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
amazing. Now you're meeting one of the George Washington's mentor.
That's
you know
right.
what I mean?
That's
who
right.
understands
yeah,
it.
That's right. Yeah.
So we showed up after the Polarity in September 5th, 69, which was the date that Dweezil Zappa's kid was born.
Mm-hmm.
Zappa's second kid, the
yeah.
son.
Yeah.
But we show up September 25th, 26th, and after the big Polarity. Then we show up in 5 years later, in 74, after the big battle between Shockley and Worcester.
Mm-hmm.
But now why was I telling you that? Worcester and Vern, his gay lover, the guy who organized the development classes, ran them and ran the seances or whatever, the channelings. When Dave went in trance, Vern was his name was Vern Christensen. He became Chris Christensen.
Mm-hmm.
He liked the name Chris better later.
Mm-hmm.
But he said Bob and Carol must have they forgot that we weren't development ministers, so we had to take the 11th course. So they set up the tape, and a few other people joined in. We started to do the ritual, and the tape machine broke.
Uh-huh.
So Carol and I always took that as a message. There was no way we were going to be fucking processed like that, because we didn't need to.
Yeah.
And that was that, and that's always been a joke between Dave and I, that we never got totally processed.
Well, he said all kinds of things, strange things happened with the last the golden, what did I say? What is it called? The golden.
So I never did the 13th. There's 12 classes,
yeah.
and then there's the master class.
Yeah, the he called it the graduation.
Yes.
Ritual. He called it the graduation ritual.
And strange things would happen when they would do it.
Yeah, and he said after they did it, boom, all kinds of shit would happen.
Yeah, no, they acted out.
Yeah.
What they did is they did the they replayed the
yeah.
original
yeah.
principality and occult rituals going back thousands of years,
yeah.
but did it with a new consciousness of not to make a trip out of it.
Right.
A power thing, and therefore they siphoned it off.
Yeah.
And then you have all these cults that surface after that, Scientology, the Moonies, trying to do that,
mm-hmm.
and they just become ridiculous.
Yeah.
And so that awareness was the best cult because they didn't try to be a cult.
Right.
And they understood what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
They were consciously... Dave always advocated conscious mediumship, not
yeah.
going into trance. That's why he
right.
he doesn't like hearing much about the Evergreens, because the guy's still in trance.
Yeah.
So it's always been an interesting interplay
yeah.
between the Evergreens and cosmic awareness in my life.
Well, I want to get more, you know, once he finds out that I'm a serious 30-year student of the language of the subconscious, if you want
yes.
to call it that, or whatever the fuck you want to call it,
yeah.
he'll maybe start talking more technical.
Well, that's what you want. That's
technically to me, you know, because
yes.
this is just the first one is just preliminary. Do you know this
yeah.
one? Do you know that one? It's like getting acquainted, you know.
Yeah, no, that's good. Probably yeah. good that you didn't tape it.
Yeah.
Just remember
well,
I did the best I could, Bob. What?
I did the best I could. You know?
No, what's good though is that you made
yeah.
notes.
Yeah.
Someday,
mm-hmm.
maybe not in tomorrow's interview, but you come back and say, "What did you say then?" And then
yeah.
he'll say it again.
Right. Yeah. Oh, he'll repeat himself.
Then you get on tape.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
how did it end?
Well,
after
it ended.
3 hours.
It ended. I had to piss really bad because
yeah.
my bladder is not. What it used to be, and he was muy sympathetic. He's, you know, he had prostate problems and all kinds
yeah.
of shit too. So,
yeah, he's had some health problems.
And it turns out, my dear friend that flies the helicopter in front of Mount Rushmore, Bruce, he fucking didn't tell me a thing about it. He went in and had he's got a scar in his belly, like just like mine. They probed him and they thought it was prostate cancer.
How do you know he didn't tell you? How do
well,
you know
he just
that?
Told me now on the phone. I just got in touch with him yesterday, and he told me the story.
What was his name, Bruce?
Bruce Schiltz is his name, yeah.
You got to ask David about...
he's a channeler. He channels stuff, Bruce.
Right. Here's the other story. While Dave was in... I don't know if he met him in Lake Elsinore, but definitely in Venice.
Mm-hmm.
In the 80s,
mm-hmm.
he got involved with a guy, I can't remember his name, who was a major guy in the Hughes organization.
Mm.
And that is an incredible story.
Okay.
I think his name's Jesse or something. Or Jesse was his friend.
Uh-huh.
Jesse's boss. You want to hear about that guy because he had millions, and he used to be very fascinated with Dave's metaphysics, and you know, really was very involved with Dave. But he told Dave a lot about what was going on in power structures.
Oh yeah,
States.
Right.
So the Hughes guy is a great story. And there's yeah. Here's a great one.
All right.
See, Dave, you can tell in his life he touched on everything.
Yeah.
In the early 50s, he's down in New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
So guess who he spent a night with?
Who?
Clay Shaw.
God damn.
He touched on that circle because of the gay network, and Clay was gay.
Mm-hmm.
And then later the Kennedy assassination happened, and he recognized these people as the information came out. He remembered
wow.
them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he also spent a night with Tennessee Williams or one of those.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, Truman Capote, I think.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, so he interacts with Clay Shaw. He
uh-huh.
does a remote viewing in 62,
uh-huh.
the Cuban Missile Crisis. He sees that.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Kennedy assassination happens. And then in 1970, he's driving across America and doing his lectures. And he shows up in Worcester, Massachusetts, named after him. And
yeah.
that's where Abbie Hoffman grew up.
Oh, really?
Worcester, Massachusetts.
Oh, really?
And I think it's there that he saw Nixon in
yeah.
a crowd.
Really?
And it's very interesting how Dave describes the Nixon in person. He found him a very powerful person,
mm-hmm.
in person, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
He didn't have a good TV image.
Yeah.
But so he touches, he sees Nixon. He always mm-hmm. touched on, he helped design early spacecraft.
He told me that. He told me just touched on that.
Yeah.
You know.
Now, you know, I have... Jerry may have a copy. I was just looking at the other day. I just got it out. I got Dave to send me. If you ever go up there, have him show you the two-hour interview I did with him.
Oh, really?
It's called The Blacked Out History of something, of the 20th century. And we go through all these stages from 1956 in the Haunted House up to 1988 when we did it. And that was in a little nightclub place during the day in Santa Monica, in Venice. And that's a pretty good interview, and it shows Dave playing music.
Oh, really? Oh.
We taped him playing the piano. He's a very good piano player.
And he's apparently a painter, too, huh?
Yeah. And Vern was a painter. Dave can do, he can do most arts, anything.
That's
know?
Great. It's amazing he doesn't write, though. I guess, you know, the info.
Well, it's too slow. It's obsolete.
It's too slow. You're right. Yeah, yeah.
I would say that he, remember, McLuhan once asked, why did Socrates, Jesus Christ, and someone else never write?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we've got to the point where the writing world is over.
Yeah.
And Worcester, as a metaphysician, is understanding the present, doesn't focus too much on reading.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't focus on writing. He lives in the present, which mm-hmm. is always being manufactured post-Rai.
Right.
He's tuned into the present.
Mm-hmm.
So the other weird phenomenon is that Worcester and I, starting in 1976, every now and then we'd get together and an earthquake would happen.
Uh-huh.
So that's an interesting
well,
thing.
Well, just stay out of there. Just don't go see him as long as I'm in San Francisco. Okay?
Right. Yeah. No, yeah. No, I will. I won't.
Don't. Let me get out of here first.
Yeah. The final one in, remember when the big earthquake up in Vancouver in Olympia, Washington?
Yeah.
That's an amazing story. In, I think it's like 2000, I don't know what year it was. It's over 3 or 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe 2001.
Mm-hmm.
He and Paul Shockley get together. They finally meet up after, like, since 1986.
Oh, really?
14 years later.
Really?
And by that time, Shockley is almost apologizing for what he did because all the bullshit that happened to him.
Oh.
And he's broken off with Avaton, who set this up in 74.
Uh-huh.
And so Dave is hearing all this bad news about Paul and Avaton. So Dave says, someone ought to give that guy a whack, something like that,
uh-huh.
some phrase like that. So he
uh-huh.
goes back to Seattle, and about 6 weeks later, a huge earthquake happens near Olympia, Washington. And up-down Vancouver area,
mm-hmm.
and it knocks out the dome in Olympia, Washington. And Olympia, Washington is one of the first places awareness started
mm-hmm.
in that area in the 60s when they mm-hmm. first started to have the organization. And the epicenter, the center of the earthquake, was 5 miles from Avaton's house.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So it's like Dave said, someone ought to smack that guy, and then he got smacked.
Ooh.
The whole area got
Ooh.
Smacked.
Ooh.
Now, Dave doesn't make any significance out of it. He laughs at me making...
Yeah.
Pseudo significance out of it.
Yeah.
I mean, I bring this up and mention it to
yeah.
him, and he listens to it, finds it interesting, but he doesn't identify with it.
Mm-hmm.
Finds it curious. But I would say, if there was a reality to it, when Dave and I get together, we siphon off a bit of the Earth Armageddon energies.
Yeah.
So an earthquake happens, you know, off in a side place or something.
Yeah.
Doesn't happen in New York City, or San Francisco, or LA.
Right. Uh-huh. Great.
So I think you were.
I'm still writing that. Notes.
Right. I think.
Yeah, writing is slow. I'll tell you.
Real slow?
Yeah, it's real slow.
Yeah.
Slow.
I think you were intuiting that on your trip in 66. I think you were encountering the hypnosis factor
mm-hmm.
in consciousness, metaphorized
well,
as being.
I didn't tell you this. I told Dave this, but our talk was so fragmented. It was like we were speaking. Clumps of shorthand to each
yeah,
other.
Yeah, all over the place.
Yeah.
Hopping around.
Yeah, hopping around and
click.
Yeah. Anyway, what did you say?
You said you didn't tell me what you told Dave.
All right, what before that? What
I was saying about siphoning off the. Oh, your trip. You met the original Rai hypnosis on your 66-day trip. The hypnosis of a so called superior being. That's what I said, and then you
yeah.
Oh, I didn't.
God damn, I don't know what I was thinking.
Well, I'll redo the idea. The
yeah.
hypnosis, when, as Rai is returning to essence,
mm-hmm.
you're interacting with this being that can see you,
mm-hmm.
see everything about you.
Mm-hmm.
To me, there are beings that can do that, but that in matter,
mm-hmm.
that is a hypnotic factor,
mm-hmm.
a radiation.
Oh, that's it. You got it. Okay. I just learned this in L.A. last year. I met this guy that produced among other things, that movie on Van Gogh, Starry, Starry Night.
Right.
It wasn't about Van Gogh, but it was about, you know, something about it. And he did the UFO movie that he filmed in Bisbee.
You mean the one on crop circles, or
the last UFO, the Roswell, the movie,
oh yeah, yeah,
the movie Roswell. And he's an interesting guy, and he gave me a book he wrote that's you know, he writes it, he couches it as a novel, you know. And it's the story of him and this other guy being guinea pigs at the New Jersey Neuropsychiatric Research Institute at Princeton in 1965.
You mean drug hypnosis? You mean what kind of guinea pig and what kind of...
Yeah, what they were doing is they were giving people LSD, and they were relating LSD, the LSD state. They were studying the LSD state as it relates to the hypnotic state.
Right.
And, you know, where trance is and all that other shit.
Did Dave mention Hubbard? Because that's what Hubbard did with the psychic group there in Seattle. Captain L. Hubbard.
Captain L. Oh, he didn't mention that. Yeah, he did mention that, but he didn't mention relating to that. But
Hubbard wanted to give LSD to very advanced psychic people like Werster, and he did it.
No, this was a study that they did for a number of years. Yeah, and it was National Institute of Mental Health funded by CIA is what it was.
Right.
Anyway, and
he writes a novel about that.
He's got the book, and it's a story about him and this guy and all they learned. And Osmond was right in the middle of it. Humphrey Osmond, you know.
Humphrey Osmond, right.
Yeah, he's the guy that coined the term psychedelic. He's the guy that gave
me
the antidote. Well, he may have turned me on to that fucking 40-day shit, too, because that wasn't...
Oh, you wrote to him, right?
I went and saw him in person, Allen Ginsberg, before I went and testified for the Congress. I said, look, you're going to testify to Allen Ginsberg, and Leary is going to testify, and Art Kleps is going to testify, and, you know, that's enough positive input. What could I say that'd be different? He says, well, why don't you go talk to Humphrey Osmond over there in New Jersey? You know, told me the thing, and I went over and talked to him. And he gave me a PIQ test.
PIQ?
He told me about his trips.
Yeah.
You know, which were amazing, unicorns and, you know, amazing stuff. I didn't believe it at all, you know.
And he's a funny-looking guy.
He's a short Englishman is what he is, you know.
Gnomic.
Yeah, no, he's great, though. He's got a lot of energy, and he's a real enthusiastic and bright guy. And it was a pleasure meeting him and spending that time with him. You know, he talked a little bit about Huxley and, you know.
Well, there you have that in common, because Werster met Humphrey, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, and so I didn't get... That's another thing we skimmed across the top of and wanted to...
You talk. Actually, like, you introduced all the areas that you will go into.
Yeah, later. Yeah, we were just gabbing. Anyway, and...
He told you stories, then he gave you a PIQ.
He gave me this PIQ test, which is 200 true false questions. And
what does P stand for?
Personality Index Quotient is what it stands for.
Right.
And it was 200 true false questions. And when the people came to give me the antidote from Osmond's office, having met me at a party, not knowing me, hearing my story...
You're with Osmond.
No, I went to see Osmond. Okay, give me the PIQ test. He talked into my tape recorder. I talked into his tape recorder. We swapped tall tales about psychedelic experiences.
And you left.
And I left. And then testified for Congress, you know.
Now you're talking about a party.
Afterwards, the guy comes down from Washington and tries to warn me not to take any acid, but he says, don't have anything to do with any drugs. Well, I wasn't a dope dealer, and I didn't really have anything to do with drugs, because the things that I'm interested in are herbs and foods.
Right.
You know,
right.
Not drugs, you know.
And this came to you after you testified.
The guy warned me. He said, they're going to get you. Don't have anything to do for another 6 months with any drugs.
They're going to get you after you testify?
They're going to get me. Yeah, who, I said. He says, it's a leak. I don't know.
The guy said it to you after you drew attention to yourself in Washington.
No, this was the guy that was the editor of the Green Book in Washington that they write after all these things, you know, the Green Book on the testimony, you know. He was a former reporter in New York.
I know, but did he tell you this after you've testified?
After I've testified, he called me from...
And
Washington and made an appointment for lunch. And I thought, he says, I want to take you out to lunch. I says, what would you like to eat? I'll make the arrangements. And he says, I just got something to share with you, and I need a noisy restaurant. I don't care about the food. I'm not going to eat.
Right.
So we went next door from the East Village, downstairs from the Fillmore East, and we, what was it, Katz's or Cantor's or one of those Jewish delicatessen where the waiters are always pissed off, you know, and they throw the dishes into the thing, you know, making loud noises. And we sat right next to where the dishes were being thrown. So the whole time it's like noise. And he says, don't have anything to do with any acid for the next 6 months. I said, why? He said, well, they're going to try to get you. And I said, who? He says, I can't tell you. It's a leak. I said, how? He said, I don't know. It's a leak. It just leaked to me. I thought I'd warn you.
And this would be the spring of 66?
This was probably August, maybe, of 66.
I'm in California.
Yeah, August.
I'm in California that month.
Probably August. And then by September, I forgot all about it after that.
Yeah.
And I saw in September in the newspaper that October 6th was the day they were going to make LSD a Class 1 felony.
Right.
So I said to Rod McDonald, who was the guy that ran the Gaslight Cafe in New York, and Bob Dylan had been, actually whose name was Robert Zimmerman, was playing guitar there.
In September 66?
No. Whenever this was, you know, he squirts, this is Rod McDonald's claim to fame, he squirts an eyedropper full of clear pharmaceutical acid, like 2,000 micrograms of rocket fuel, into Dylan's drink.
Oh.
Dylan doesn't know it. It's the drink and becomes Bobby Zimmerman. He becomes Bob Dylan. Changes from Bobby Zimmerman to Bob Dylan.
And that'd be about 5 years before.
Yeah, or whatever it was. I don't think it was 5 years, but I think it was maybe, you know, early 60s.
If it's 66.
Yeah.
It's 61. He becomes Bob Dylan, and his albums come out in 61, 62, first album.
Okay, 62. But 61.
Acid he probably got from Worcester's Circle out in San Francisco.
Yeah, 60 maybe is when he did. Okay.
Right.
So anyway, that's his claim to fame, and he was into distributing everything. He distributed the Village Voice before he came to work for the East Village Other, but he was distributing, his little sideline was dealing drugs, you know.
And so, he distributed the East Village Other?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But he ran the cafe.
Well, he sold that by the time he got to work for the Village Voice, and then a few years later he came to work for the East Village Other.
So he's older than you.
Yeah, he's quite a few years older.
Yeah.
And he's a Scotsman, a really dour man, you know. But a great guy, straight business, didn't have to keep accounts. And he followed me around with a bag of money and paid all my bills. You know, it was really great. At the top.
He had the drugs on the side.
He did his little, I didn't know that. But I said to him, rumor gets around. I said, Rod, have you seen any good LSD lately? Because it says in the paper here they're going to make it a Class 1 felony in a few weeks. He says, no, but a guy offered me a free sample the other day. And I said, really? Was it any good? He says, he says it's the best he's ever found. I said, why don't you get some from him? See if he's still got it.
A free sample of, we don't know what it is.
We called it acid, right?
Right.
We called everything acid.
Right. So it was sort of like, supposedly, LSD-like.
Yeah, and I asked him, is this good? And he said, yeah. He says, this doesn't look like LSD. He says, believe me, the guy says it's great, you know. So he took a pill. You know, big capsules.
No, the guy already told you he took it. Oh, wait. Rob is telling you this other guy said it was great.
Yeah. And then
now
Rob,
you guys have it.
And now we have it, and Rob took it, and I took two. Big fucking horse capsules. And everybody else took one, and two guys went nuts and went to Bellevue, and one guy is still on psych meds to this day. The last I checked in.
What happened to Rob?
Well, he didn't even fuck. It was like it didn't even faze him. I mean, he said it was just. I described the trip. He was with me when the bird flew in the window and all the shit happened.
And
he was there,
That's the beginning of your 40-day trip.
Yeah, he was there. And we're walking down the street after I already died and reborn that night, right? We go over to the office. He wants to go over to the office for some reason. We go for a walk. We're walking down
after you died or he died?
I died, and he brought me back to life, you know.
Right.
He said, arise, Lazarus, and started me laughing, you know.
Sure. Is it Rod, R-O-D, or R-O-B is a
R-O-D, his rod and his staff to guide him. Yeah, and that's the way it was. That's what I thought of it. You know, that's
Rod and his staff guided you through. And
guided
you
me through, yeah.
And that's like 12 hours later you took it, after you took it?
No, this is like 2 hours afterwards.
Right.
We go out in the street, and I'm walking down the street with him, and there's this guy in a neat cashmere long coat, and a crew cut, and he's not, you know, he's 5'11 or something, as I remember. Distinctive looking face, kind of with a dimple on the side. You know, he looks like a Gemini type guy head. And Rod says, "Well, hi," and he goes, "All right," and walks by like he doesn't want to talk to him. And I get nothing but ding, 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 cop bells, right? Because this guy was like probably in his late 50s, you know. Anyway, and I said, and we walked on down the road. I said, "Who's that?" And he says, "That's the guy that gave us the free samples." And in 1973 or whatever it was in that era, I saw his picture in the paper when he died. And that was Colonel George White.
Yeah, the guy who said he loved to do everything in the CIA, kill people.
Right. He says,
yeah.
where can you have more fun? And,
yeah,
you know,
that famous quote.
Yeah, famous quote.
So you didn't know who he was till then?
I didn't know who he was until I saw him, his obit in the paper. And, you know, and then I'd seen Osmond before, and then afterwards, I mean, at this party, I'm thinking of committing suicide. And
so you felt, when you felt after a couple of hours that you weren't going to die, and then Rod brought you back.
I died. No, I didn't think I was not going to die. I died.
Was that a negative experience?
No, it's like a liberating experience.
Oh, okay, but now a few hours later,
you go down a tunnel and there's a Sphinx and a bunch of lights and all kinds of great shit. And,
but you're saying that a few hours later you had a party and now
No, it wasn't a few hours later. It was a few weeks later. I'm at the party. I've all gone through all this shit. I'm right in the middle of the 40 days.
You mean you're still stoned?
Well, I didn't get off of the real effect of the thing for 2.5 years.
Right, but within the 40 days, you're just feeling good or something?
40 days, no, I'm peaked out seeing, Worcester and I compared notes to this, too.
Right.
And, you know, like I told him, I was thinking of committing suicide because I'm living outside my body.
And how long, when did that happen? 2 months later?
No.
A month later?
This was like a couple weeks later, maybe.
Right, and you're in a party feeling this way.
No. And then I went through this whole thing where I'm standing in my loft with a loaded .38 in my head. I'm blowing my fucking brains out.
Right.
And I swear to God, it was George Byrne before he made the movie, Oh God, but it sounded just like God speaking in George Byrne's voice,
right,
saying, "Thou shalt not kill anything, stupid." And when he said stupid, I knew he was talking to me. And the whole my lives, all my lives triggered and flickered in front of me, ran like a film. And I saw myself standing there with the .38, and it went on into the future. And I saw my surgery and my death. And they said, "No, we're going to intervene here, and you're going to have another 20 years. So I went into this surgery with that belief, you know, that this was just...
The surgery you had that, last year.
That I just had on January 8th, past.
Right.
It's this year.
Which I think is Elvis's birthday or something.
January 8th is?
Yeah. Really? On that surgery you saw back in 66.
Yeah.
You're saying.
Yeah, and I saw my whole life, you know. Everything before and after that until I'm 84 or 5 or something.
Right, that's where you get the 84 thing.
It's one cycle of Uranus, and I was born with Uranus conjunct the Sun. Coincidentally, which I didn't know any of this at the time. You know,
right.
That came all later, that knowledge.
I know you died at 84, and I was thinking that last year when they were saying that you might die.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, well, how does this fit in with that? But you're saying that in the vision, they would let you live another 20 years.
Yeah, they gave me. They said, "We're going to intervene to give you another 20 years. And I'm telling you, this experience I had with the surgery and everything was like an alien showed up, a little 35-year-old woman, named Ramamurthy, you know, this a department head of this whole fucking hospital, this college thing, and how the hell, and she's got a little baby, and her husband is a open heart major heart surgery guy down in San Diego, and she's misses because he didn't get to see her baby growing up because he's never home,
right.
So he wants her to come down, and she wants him to come up, but they started out here, and he's got a better job down there, and the climate's better, so she goes, finally she left, and she went down there. But
no,
she was there just, I was her last real client.
Oh,
and she says to everybody, "I know you're going to come through this, you know."
Because she told everybody.
She told everybody, and she told me. And she said, "I've seen a lot of people, and I've never been wrong in this." So that was before I went into surgery. When I went into surgery and I come out, in what Under the Effects of Versed, which is an interesting CIA drug, she says, the first thing she says to me is, well, it's malignant, but I'll tell you about it tomorrow. You know, and I couldn't remember if she said it was benign or malignant.
Right.
You know, when she told me it was malignant, I didn't believe that she said that because that ain't going to get me. I know that. And she knew that, too, because she got everything out of it. She says, you don't need to do the radiation and the chemo, you know.
She got it out by her surgery.
Yeah. Yeah, the prostate cancer is an entirely different thing.
Right.
And I wouldn't let them do a biopsy until everything else was over.
Yeah, and what she's working on is that weird bladder thing you were talking about.
She worked on the bladder. Well, I had this. She took out 18 inches of the colon, too.
Right.
With that big...
So, but back to... you're back at the party.
So I'm telling him I'm committing suicide, and he's in Worcester, and he says, I've been there, done that, you know? So, and he said that two or three times when we were talking, but...
Yeah.
Anyway, so I'm at a party telling somebody about how I got a, you know, like Huxley, you know, did this, and he came, and they had seances, and then he pushed a book off and told Laura about the other side, you
right.
know? And I said, I'm going to do something like that to set up an experiment. I'm just not going to waste my life, you know, but already God had told me I was stupid, you know.
You had already had that vision.
Already had that happen.
Doing it maybe.
But still, I'm thinking about it, you know.
Yeah.
And the lady sitting next to me, who I was introduced to, somebody or other, she says, what's your name? And I told her, and she says, you know, Dr. Osmond's been talking about you lately. I said, really? Yeah, he saw you in London, and he saw you here in this place, and that. And I'd been astral traveling to all these places.
Right.
You know, and there were other people that showed up and confirmed my experiences as actual, you know. somebody did jump on the table and take off their clothes or some shit, you know.
Right.
Whatever it was.
Yeah.
Anyway. And so she says, don't do anything until I get there, and I'll be there tomorrow. And she did show up right on time, called and everything, made arrangements.
Don't do anything in terms of killing yourself?
Yeah, anything. Don't do anything.
Yeah. So she showed up.
Yeah, she shows up with this guy, her husband, I think it was, and they were part of the Humphrey Osmond's group that experimented with alcoholism, curing alcoholism with psychedelics.
Yeah, that's the documentary I was telling you about. I got footage of that.
Really?
Yeah, up in Saskatchewan.
Yeah, so... no, they were doing a New Jersey Neuropsychiatric Research Institute
there, right?
At Princeton. Yeah,
continued it.
That was this one, you know.
Yeah, that was always the cover. We're helping alcoholics.
Yeah, and yeah, it was great. And and anyway, she says that. So she gives me this big jar of vitamin C and a big jar of niacinamide. But first she says, take this PIQ test. Now I remember what the PIQ test was from the first time, so I...
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't the same. It didn't look the same. My answers were so. My answers are all. How do you say yes or no to this true or false? You know, you can't say that because this is all a paradox we're dealing with. So I was writing shit on the back, and the whole thing was covered. And it looked like a madman had done it. Yeah, but it was all true. That was
didn't say yes or no.
That was the true one. Yeah, yeah, right. And so and then I took the niacinamide, and about 2 weeks later, I was fine. But then they sent me up to a Reichian psychiatrist in Midtown who gave me another PIQ test and talked to me a while. And they made me talk into a tape recorder. And then so they have three PIQ tests before, during, and after, and narrative before, during, and after, you know.
Yeah.
Of me. So I'm a well-studied case. I am the only legally sane person that you've ever met.
Yeah, you got more than the initial
I got made sane. I got certified sane.
Three times.
Well, no, actually only the third time, but, you know.
Okay, would you say that this 40 days was the beginning after Labor Day, September 66, and goes into the October 8th, say, or middle of October? Or did
well, I was still no, I was still high. I remember Halloween, and I remember, you know, I don't know when I came down off of it, but I
at the 40 days. So you would say the 40 days may have started at 1st of October,
or I think it might have started at you know, yeah.
Goes into November.
I always celebrate my birthday as October 6th, 1966, because we were trying to beat the date.
Right.
So it could have been a few days or a week before that date.
That you took it.
Yeah.
that George White gave you that stuff.
Yeah. Well, gave it to Rod, who didn't give it to me. Yeah.
Now, two thoughts. First of all, if they were studying you, spying on you, they'd see you're a friend of Rod. They knew to give it to Rod.
Yeah.
To get it to you.
Right.
And so that was what that guy warned you about.
Yeah.
He warned that they were going to get you, and they did.
Yeah.
With that stuff, right?
Right.
Uh-huh. And that was through Rod. They watched who your network
Yeah,
was.
So I'm walking down the street with Rod saying, wow, this is amazing. And then all this stuff. And then when I finally brought up the question of could this have been the government dosing, you know?
Yeah.
He says, no, the government doesn't give any drugs. Especially they wouldn't give you any good drugs like this, you know, because he took it too.
Right.
But he thought it was nothing more than just acid, LSD. He must have been taking some fucking strong acid, is all I can say.
But he said that to you in the first couple hours?
Yeah.
Yeah, that it was not, it couldn't be a government drug.
Or when, you know, shortly after I saw the guy, you know, walking on the street in a cashmere coat, and that happened, we got over to the East Village other, you know, there was a bird, like a tropical bird trapped in the office. And we went, you know, and Rod wanted to catch it and let it loose into the park. And he said, we'd done the pay stubs, and there was a cardboard on the, I just reached at random on the cardboard and gave it to him. And he took a box, and there was a column. The bird was between the glass and a column, and he put the box on one side, took the cardboard and pushed it against the other side, and the bird went into the box. And then he closed the lid and opened the door and let the bird out, you know. And then we looked at the card involved. And the card on one side had a drawing of the sun, and it said life. And on the other side, it had skull and crossbones, and it said death on the thing. And so everything was that cosmic dimension, you know, the metaphorical dimension. So at some point, I said, man, this is whatever this is, man, this is. And, you know, he says, oh, this is just nothing but regular acid, you know. And I said, no, I think the government gave us something. He says, the government never gave you good drugs. They'll give you bad drugs.
That's what Rod said.
That's what Rod said, yeah.
Now, that's about 3 hours after taking it?
Oh, I don't know. I don't remember. No.
But
I think it was already dawn. It was already the next day.
When you're doing the bird thing.
The bird thing happened at dawn, and then let it go in the dawn, and then probably the next afternoon or something like that, or maybe even the next day we had the conversation.
About the drugs.
About the
government.
Drugs, yeah.
But did you take it in the afternoon?
No, I took it at night.
Took it at night.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the interesting thing is that if you're going through October into November,
mm-hmm.
that period,
mm-hmm.
it'd be interesting to get a date, is on October 29th that mm-hmm. Carol and I hook up.
Mm-hmm.
So you were, if you got solved,
mm-hmm.
when you fixed it, if you got fixed on October 28th,
mm-hmm.
you know, at
mm-hmm.
your niacin, and then 2 weeks later,
mm-hmm.
then you cleared it up, and then we got together.
Mm-hmm.
See, there's the timing.
I don't know if I don't think.
Or that, did we get together and that helped you out of it?
I don't know, but
you know, the walking.
I mean,
up
I'm trying to match the dates. I think I
know the exact dates.
I want
for me.
Yeah, I don't know them. I went into. I can't remember Thanksgiving that year or Christmas.
So you're in that state.
I try to remember, you know, I can't remember even having Thanksgiving or Christmas.
Because you're in this weird state.
Well, I know I gave all my money away. I left my door and my loft open all the time, you know, and when I left.
Is that during the 40 days or after the 40 days?
Well, when I call the 40 days, you know, I don't know if it was 40 days. It might have been 40 days and nights, you know. That's what I came up with in the middle of the trip. My God, this is 40 days. 40 days and 40 nights. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't know.
But is there, you know that it had something to do with October 6th. It was around there that this happened.
Yeah, October 6th is the date I call my birthday.
Right.
So it could have been, you know, it could have been anywhere in the end of September.
Right.
But then it went over to October, through October.
Right, because you were intending to take. Yeah, well, that's the point. You were taking this stuff before it was illegal.
Yeah,
so you had
that was it.
It
had to do before October 6th, right?
Yeah. So that gets you into near the. I say that you fucking came out of it. You got cured by the niacinamide, which is something that Carol would give to people.
Niacinamide and vitamin C in combination, apparently.
We had our first niacinamide in 69 when Dave gave it.
Oh, yeah.
That's why our first niacinamide was Dave Worster in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
So you got your niacinamide, then Carol and I hooked up.
Mm-hmm.
We were ready to move into the new plane of existence.
Mm-hmm.
Walter had been brought into harmony.
Mm-hmm.
He'd gone through the mystical Rai experience.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know about that. Because I don't know who Rai is. You know?
I know. Well, that's part of what you're going to talk to Dave about.
Yeah, right.
That's what get into the structure of hypnosis.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that'll be great. I'm going to do it.
So that's a pretty good story.
Yeah.
It's a good first session you had.
Yeah.
See, that's how I remember things. I remember what I was doing.
You actually remember the days, though, don't you?
Yes. I can remember almost every day of my life.
I think that's a curse.
It can be.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to remember the fucking days, you know.
Well, that's interesting. That's one of the... Sometimes I don't like to remember certain things, so
yeah.
I think, shit, I wish I had no memory.
Yeah.
But I have not too many bad things, so not overloaded with bad memories.
No, but I just don't like the idea that we are temporal. You know, we're not, you know, we are mortal and temporal. And I don't like to remember that, because I feel...
Well, the reason I have a good memory, maybe, is that I don't identify with the present.
That's good.
I'm not here, so I can remember everything. I'm not blocking it for mortal reasons.
Yeah, most people are just trying to get present. You're not even close.
Dave Worster, one time in 77, in someone's house on Venice Beach, we were talking, and then it was at nighttime on the veranda, and then he said, "What did you just say?"
Mm-hmm.
And I restated exactly what I had said.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, "Very good, Bob. That means you're in the present."
Yeah.
And so I like the way he tested me on that.
Yeah.
And I passed the test with flying colors.
Yeah.
Because he was checking to see how much was I there with him.
Mm-hmm. Now, what time did that happen?
I would say about midnight.
Jesus Christ.
I know exactly. I don't know the address.
Yeah.
I know I can see the veranda, and I can see him and me in the back. We're at some party, but we were outside. And when Dave and I get together, we would always be intently talking. Everybody else is partying. Dave and I are probing the deep recesses of Rai. Because I was a real person.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Someone that, you know, that he could interact with.
Yeah. Yeah.
He always, he'll probably say it, he says, if I want to know what I did, I just ask Bob. He tells me what I did and when I did it.
I think it's great. He refers to Bob and Connie.
Yes.
You know.
Wait a minute.
Huh?
No, Bob and Connie.
Yeah.
They're the guys the gay lovers, who I want you to Google.
Oh.
Bob Carr, Robert Carr. It's a great Google because... Carr tells his diary. It's a diary or something. He's involved with the anti-Krishnamurti. There is some guy who's a Manipian guru, and his name's Krishnamurti, but he's not the other Krishnamurti.
Not the Krishnamurti, yeah.
Yeah, he's the anti-Krishnamurti, the Manipian.
Uh-huh.
And you Google him, and put Krishnamurti and Bob Carr.
Okay.
And matter of fact, I've probably got a list. I should send it to you.
Okay.
And you see a diary. Bob Carr tells his diary, and in 1995, he tells how he hears how Connie died.
Mm.
Now, Bob and Connie set up the Center of Integration in the 50s. Dave meets them, and they're very important in his life, Bob and Connie. So I don't think he was referring to me. He was talking about Bob Carr and Connie.
Oh.
I don't know what Connie's last name was.
Mm.
And so in 69, I meet Bob. I don't know if we met Connie. I remember meeting Bob. And they were a bit distant because they thought Dave was running a cult, and they didn't care about channeling because they were into Krishnamurti, which was, you know, you don't go into channeling stuff.
Yeah.
But here it is. Mm. I told Dave this earlier this year. He hasn't seen Bob, who they ran a restaurant in San Francisco in the 80s, and they had one of the first light shows in the 60s up in L.A. and in Seattle and San Francisco. So they were part of the Grateful Dead world and all that.
Oh.
And so they knew a lot about that world, but then they went to India or something, and they were always very involved in Krishnamurti. But here's Dave hasn't seen him in 20 years or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I went on and I found these guys, so I told Dave, hey, here's what happened to Connie. And I read it to him. And he says, shit, he fucking died. I never knew that.
Mm-hmm.
And Bob's still alive because it was written like 2001.
Mm-hmm.
But that's who he meets with Bob and Connie. But we meet these fuckers. This is psychodrama.
Mm-hmm.
This is what I mean, that you get involved with Dave.
Mm-hmm.
The effects precede the causes.
Mm-hmm.
Or the psychodrama. This I hear about Bob and Connie from 69 on, because it was very important, the relationship he had with them. Bob and Connie probably were fucking with Dave and whoever Dave was with, probably Vern, when they were fucking with the Dalai Lama's brother. You know what I mean? And so it's always Bob and Connie. So when Dave heard about this Bob Dobb stuff, it was a big laugh. I mean, Bob and Connie, here I am talking about Bob and Connie, but for Dave, he acted it out in the 50s with Bob and
Connie.
So he may be referring to us, but he might be referring to the other Bob and Connie.
Maybe.
So that's what you have to make a distinction.
I didn't know there was another Bob and Connie.
they were the effects before I showed up.
I'm going to have to run.
Okay, well, we had a good run here.
Yeah, I got to go to...
This is great. You got this free phone.
Yeah, well, it's $30 bucks a month. You know?
Yeah, but you can talk for 1,000 hours.
Yeah,
that's
you
really
just
good.
Keep talking. Yeah. But
so that's good.
Yeah, I got to go down to the get my Casadex.
So November 13th, 2004, your next 20 years starts by hooking up with Worcester. That's symbolic.
Yeah, November 13th.
You made it to someone you could talk to.
Yeah, yeah. What is November 13th?
It doesn't have any resonance right now. It
doesn't have anybody's
November 11th, 2 days after Remembrance Day.
Yeah.
Google it, November 13th, see what happens.
Yeah, we'll see who did what on this day, yeah.
Well, it is 11, wait a minute, it's a 22. It's 11 and 13. Mm. 1 from 3 is 2, 11 is 2, so it's a 22 day.
Well, that's good, man.
Yeah, and it's 2004, which is 8, or 4 minus 2 is 2, 3, 2, so it's a lot in there.
Tomorrow's a 23 day then, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, what is it, the 14th?
I'm going to talk to him tomorrow.
Yeah, but it's 14, which is your number.
Yeah.
See, that's why you didn't tape today. It's the 14th.
Oh.
Okay. Which is your birthday, May 14th.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So how old, what are you? That would be, it's 6 months. It's 6 months in what year? You're 65?
I'm 65 now.
So Worcester was 65 in...
He's 11 years older than me.
So 1993, when he's telling me about Rai in the final stages.
Oh, oh.
So 11 years later,
you
reach his age after he told me what I'm explaining to you back in 93.
Right.
On your birthday probably, on May, it was in the spring of 93, it was probably May 14, 93, he told me this.
Great.
About the residue of Rai.
So
and Clinton got 5 years.
So you're a predeterminist then, huh?
Yeah. Well, yes. We all know that. All times have already happened.
Yeah.
The Evergreens lay that
out.
It's all happening. It all happened.
Yeah.
And it's going to happen again.
Yeah. Again and again and again.
We're going to keep doing it again and again.
Yeah.
I guess we take different. Like, I'll be Walter in the next time.
Again, and there is
no game.
And I'll
be talking to Bob and describing. And Bob, you will be me saying, well, what time was it?
Yeah. And there is no gain.
Yeah, there is no gain.
It may be a gain, but it's no gain.
A game and a game and a game.
It's all forever, eternally, again and again, but there ain't no gain.
Well, that's what you got to ask Dave.
What?
It's interesting. Someone just posted a variation of this. You ask Dave
uh-huh.
about how it's two people can get together. Very rare when three people get together can kind of have something pretty good. Four people is almost impossible. But if you get four people going, that's amazing. And that's the power of 3.1, or maybe it's 1.3. You got to ask him about the 1.3 or the 3.1. That's a really interesting metaphysic. And that was it, the 3.1.
Okay.
So the four people.
Okay.
Humans can't get four people together.
Well, yeah. Shit, they can't get one person together.
Right, you can't get one, two attempted.
They got multiple personalities just to keep from being alone, you know.
Yes, yes. And then you write this one down, the 144 aspects in our brain.
Oh, yeah.
You know the 144...